Coming up on This Week in Google, I'm here in place of a sick Leo who's at home binge-watching Netflix. We've got Gina, we've got Jeff, we've got Danny Sullivan of Search Engine Land. We're going to be talking all about Google's efforts to tailor its services to the younger generation. We're going to be talking about Google Plus a little bit. We're going to be talking about CAPTCHAs and how Google's trying to make CAPTCHAs a little bit more friendly for humans. It's all coming up next on This Week in Google.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 278 for Wednesday, December 3rd, 2014. Google calls back. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by LittleBits, the easy way to build electronics with modular building blocks. Go to littlebits.com and enter the promo code TWIG, and you'll receive $20 off your purchase of $80 or more. And by SmartThings. SmartThings lets you control and monitor your home from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. To get started, visit smartthings.com/twit, and you'll save 10% off any home security or solution kit when you use the code TWIT10 at checkout. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace which connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Visa prepaid card when you get a loan. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google, where we get together, talk about Google, the cloud, social, pretty much anything that the gang wants to talk about. I am obviously not Leo Laporte. My name is Jason Howell. I host a few other shows on the network. All About Android is one of them. And if you like Google, maybe you like Android, so maybe you've seen me over there. But this is my first Twig. A little intimidated, ain't gonna lie, but it's made a little easier because I have a lot of awesome people joining me on the show today. First up, my cohort from All About Android, Gina Trapani. How are you doing, Gina?
Good to be here. It's so weird in a cool, awesome way to have you hosting Twig. I love it. I saw you a mere 20 hours ago, Jason, doing All About Android. I love it.
It's like a reunion right now. We're one Ron shy of a reunion.
Here we are.
That's all right. Well, it's awesome to be doing a show with you less than 24 hours later.
Yeah.
And, of course, Jeff Jarvis joins us as well. How's it going, sir?
All right. We were doing pronunciation guides before the show in Leistungsschutzrecht.
Yeah, so you sprung literally 10 seconds before we started. Hey, you should learn this word. And Leistungsschutzrecht?
You're getting there. That's all you need to know. That's it.
Okay.
That's
I'm going to forget it in like 5 seconds. So that's Leistungsschutzrecht. Well, okay. I'm going to give up on that for now. And also joining us to fill out the panel today, Danny Sullivan of Search Engine Land. How's it going, sir?
Good. How are you?
Excellent. Super thrilled to have you join us today.
Can I say something about you, Danny?
Sure.
So Danny and I were at the Newsgeist Unconference run by Google and the Knight Foundation at Phoenix Computer Works. And I've always had immense respect for Danny. But after we had the session about what Google could do for news and Danny's insightful, incisive comments, I just left saying, damn, that guy is effing smart.
Nice.
I've always been a fan, Danny. But boy, you know, when you sit down to analyze one of the issues at hand, you really just are amazing at having the right perspective and right way to say it. Aww. So I'm always happy when you're on the show.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to be here, and it was fun being in Professor Jarvis's classroom.
Professor Jarvis,
I want video.
One of the sessions, and we all sat down in this like classroom setting. I'm like, wow, can I get to call you professor?
I think that feels very old, Danny. Very old.
So let's see here. So I was kind of pouring through stories to fill out the doc, of course. I'd say I'm closest to Android content, but wow, there's been no Android news, so let's not start there. How about we start with the thing that literally I think I saw come through less than an hour ago, but it kind of caught my attention, and that is that Google is going to kind of put their efforts behind creating products and tailored products, their most popular products, for 12 and under, for children, essentially. Pavni Dewanji, who's the VP of Engineering at Google, told USA Today the company is looking to create these tailored versions of their services, and she says the big motivator inside the company is everyone's having kids, so there's a push to change the products to be fun and safe for children. And I mean, it kind of goes without saying that kids under 13 in internet services have long kind of been considered off limits when it comes to these services. She said, we aren't looking to play gotcha. It's just about kids being protected and promoting business compliance. Kind of an interesting effort. I suppose it makes perfect sense that Google would want to do this. Google's always looking to kind of broaden, you know, their reach, broaden their scope and everything. Does it sound like this might be something that Google's going to have to kind of fight for in order to pull off successfully? What do you guys think?
It's so interesting that they said that they're doing this because lots of people at the company are having kids. That really struck me, right? Because, like, you know, I mean, Google is so grounded in geek culture, and certainly there's this, like, you know, build the thing that you need, scratch your own itch. And we know that Google has this 20% time where you can build, the products that matter to you. So, of course, if Googlers are having more kids, like, they're going to focus more on kids. But that kind of thing makes me really nervous, you know, because what they're really saying is, like, we build the things that we need ourselves. And if you look at Google's diversity numbers, like, we all know that, like, people who work at Google are very well paid and of a certain class and often of a certain gender and color. So that makes me a little bit nervous. That said, you know, designing products for kids online gets a little tricky because of COPPA, the Child Online Privacy Act. There's a lot of pretty strict rules about what information you can collect, which is like none, and that kind of thing. So I wonder how Google's going to navigate that. I worked on a social network, a very early social network back in the day called Bolt, which is no longer around. But it was sort of like Facebook for high school students back in the day. And that was a big deal, you know, like the, you know, not signing up kids under 13 and like kids lying about their age, which is what every kid does, especially now, like on Xbox. It was always kind of a big deal. And COPPA, this looming thing that we were going to get caught for doing something wrong, was always kind of a big deal. So I wonder how they're going to handle that.
Yeah, I remember COPPA was changed about a year ago and made basically more stringent. In some ways that I think were a bit silly. One example was that if you tried to do an educational game for students with geography tied to where they live, that would be PII, just even knowing anything like what town they're in, and you couldn't use that. And so it's hard to imagine how Google can target services, personalized services, to a young person without getting in COPPA trouble. I mean, I'm glad. I think making young people more, you know, more literate about research and how to find things and all that is wonderful. But boy, I do see, Danny, have you heard any rumblings about whether this is going to cause trouble for Google too?
In terms of having COPPA stuff come in?
Yeah, privacy stuff. And oh my God, Google's trying to exploit children.
Well, I was skimming through the article just now, and you could see the Epic was already coming in saying, well, we don't want to sell them products or stuff or whatever, and we don't want to. So yeah, I'm sure that will come in as an issue for them. But you know, I guess
journalists would find one other person to quote than that made up organization. Just one.
Well, someone's going to do it, and if not, in about a week, someone in Congress will send a letter asking seven questions for Google to explain what their plans are. But you know, I think that I think we're long overdue to recognize kids are getting online and using products and services from all sorts of companies. And the idea that, you know, I think you want to have them protected, but, you know, my kids have had Facebook accounts and they, you know, my youngest only just recently turned to the age where he could actually have one, right? And, you know, you want to get them going with Google Play stuff, or you even want to get them going on the Xbox or whatever, and, you know, you're just making up stuff. So we've got protections that actually sometimes don't actually base themselves in the reality, and it doesn't allow the companies to you know, offer better things that they could do. So, yeah, I think it makes sense. It's kind of amusing, though, because when I was skimming through it, one of the things that was motivating them was, like, you know, her daughter was searching for trains and didn't get Thomas the Tank Engine to come up, right? And I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, it's not like Google hasn't thought for years they should have a kid search engine. And it's not like we didn't have things like Yahooligans, which died, if anybody remembers, was Yahoo's, you know, thing. And so I suspect that what they're going to discover is what might be a great idea, it sounds like, in it just makes me laugh. It's like, and we're having kids. It's like, the company is 15 years old. The company's been having kids all along, okay? You know, it's not like they just discovered this sort of thing, but, you know.
I just looked up. Facebook said last year that they were going to develop services for under 13s. And I don't think we've heard anything about that since, have we?
No, but I suspect part of the problem is you. It sounds like a great idea, and then you go and develop it, and it's like, well, how are you making money off of it, right? Because if you have ads that are targeting the kids, they come under a special scrutiny. Even if you're not personalizing the stuff to the kids, all you need is a kid going to a kid search engine and doing a search and getting an inappropriate ad, and it's even worse than if they used a regular search engine and they got the inappropriate ad.
Well, Danny,
right?
Do they have to have ads? If you argue that this is a way to indoctrinate, brainwash and enslave little children as they,
well, no,
they get older, the age of 13.
You don't have to, and that's, in fact, that's what Bing was doing with their Bing for Schools program, which is still running, and they've, I think, had some gains with it where they were saying, look, we're going to give you a search engine that's doing no targeting, that's doing nothing whatsoever, just to be out there and you can use it. And in fact, they'd poked back at Google because Google, if you recall, I think it was about a year ago, Google's program that they ran for kids in schools, they'll do the same sort of thing, give you like a Google friendly kid, you know, filter search engine, but they had these terms that sort of suggested that they might still build up profiles. so you're still building up profiles of the kids or whatever, and that didn't go down well in some quarters, if I remember it all correctly. So you don't have to have it, but if you want to have a child specific, you don't have to have it, but then the question is, what's your motivation in doing it? So like for Facebook, what's their motivation in building out a child service for kids? To capture them early, I suppose. But then, you know, they may just feel like, yeah, it sounds like a good idea, but the kids are already getting online already. And so if we just sort of ignore all this, you know, it's solving a problem that maybe they don't necessarily have because the parents and everybody else are just solving it anyway until someone sues them.
I mean, Chromebooks have a lot of young users, right? Because they're so popular in education. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, Apple, I mean, the Macs, part of the Macs comeback had to do with the fact that it was so popular in, you know, in elementary schools. You know, I wonder if this is a kind of a gateway or if this could be a gateway for Google creating a no ad pay for product. Like, I think that there are parents who would pay $5 a month or whatever to have a kid friendly Google that doesn't track their kids and doesn't advertise toward their kids, but and gives them, you know, kid friendly search results and Thomas when they search for trains. But I don't know, maybe that's a whole different thing.
Isn't that a can of worms, Gina, when you define kid friendly across this country? No,
that's true. You know,
evolution, no evolution.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No. It is a can of worms. Well, it is a can of worms. I'm wondering more about the pay for, because I think there was we covered an article a few episodes back where I think it was Larry Page was talking about, you know, different initiatives that they considered inside Google. And one of those things was, you know, the option to pay for a customer pay for a Google account without being, you know, advertised to, you know, was that an option? And I wonder if Google ever, you know, really considers that as a different business model, because they're just so heavily, you know, their main revenue is about advertising. And that's got to worry them that their primary source of income is advertising when a kid's product like that just isn't suited toward that business model.
Yeah, maybe then it is just less about making money directly off the kids by serving ads and more just giving them the tool that they're already going to use anyways. But in the long term, you know, like you were saying, Jeff, kind of attaching them to Google's services, almost like, you know, advertisements for Coca-Cola. You see the billboard for Coca-Cola. That's not necessarily going to push you out to go buy a Coca-Cola, because we all know Coca-Cola at this point. But it kind of confirms your belief in Coca-Cola. It's like, yeah, that's up there, and I see it and identify with it. It's like confirmation that you're making the right decision. Same could apply here. It's not necessarily a direct money grab at kids, throwing ads at them or whatever. But kids are doing this anyways, right? Like we're talking about, parents are creating accounts for their kids so that they can get on and, you know, send email. Like nowadays in school, now more than ever, the internet is intrinsically a part of how children learn. And I have to imagine a lot of that starts before the age of 13. So how do you approach that with kids that are younger than 13?
How old are your kids, Danny?
Mine are 13 and 15.
So
they're just in that transition age right now.
Right,
exactly. I went to Henry Blodgett's Business Insider conference, and he pulled the great trick that Web 2.0 conference used to do of having a panel of teenagers talk about their uses.
Right.
So standard questions, are they using Facebook? Is Instagram their social network? Where are they on what services they use?
They're big on Instagram, you know, more than Facebook, a little bit more on Twitter. So, you know, their Facebook is actually relatively minimal, which is just interesting. They don't use Snapchat, which surprised me, you know, because apparently everybody uses Snapchat, but, you know, they don't do that much Snapchatting or whatever. So they don't use Google Plus. They do use Shocking. Google. And they do a lot on the Xbox, actually, you know, and they connect with a lot of their friends on the Xbox. I think Xbox sometimes gets undercredited for the amount of social activity it has on there. But I think that's also down to Microsoft doing a really poor job of bringing it off the Xbox platform. But, you know, like my son the other day, we were playing, and I sent him a message, or, you know, I said, why didn't you answer me? And he's like, why didn't you send me like an Xbox chat thing? I was like, because I'm really old. I don't think.
Because I don't have an Xbox right in front of me
and
here at work.
I thought just yelling really loudly from downstairs was going to be effective, but, you know. So
I find those panels or those, you know, those. A friend of mine published an interview with his 14-year-old niece about what. I feel like it's really weird. You're never going to find, you know, a panel of teenagers that represent all teens. It's just strange. I feel like adults, you could get 100 opinions about what social networks they use. And I feel like it's the same thing with teenagers. I mean, my 14-year-old niece says she doesn't use Facebook because, like, the old people took over, you know, and her mom's really big, you know, uses Facebook a lot. You know, and I have nephews who are huge, you know, like, love Facebook. And also Xbox is a big one. I just think it, like, really depends on the kid and the region and the age and what their friends are doing and, like, what sort of caught fire in their particular class. I don't know. I feel like when we're like, oh, what are the kids doing? Like, there's just no straight answer to that, you know?
Yeah. So what about you, mother of young one? Does a kiddie version of Google sound appealing?
Yeah, I mean, it does. It does. I mean, I don't know. I haven't. I really wrestle with, like, what's this going to be like when Etta starts experimenting and looking at things. I mean, she's already wanting to play with all my devices.
It only gets worse, Gina.
I'm sure.
And fast. Yes.
Yeah, Jason is closer. Is definitely closer than I am. I mean, your kids are downloading games
So I have a 1 and a 4-year-old, almost 5-year-old. And I mean, you know, she has, you know, I have the Nexus 6 with Lollipop. It has a profile on it for her that I specifically use so that my YouTube and whatever doesn't get filled with frozen, you know,
videos.
Barbie doll movies and everything. But, so I agree with you, though, Gina. It's a really tough question to answer when it comes to your kids, because I feel like we're kind of in this weird zone where we're learning along with everybody else what's appropriate for really young children when it comes to the internet. On one hand, you want to protect them from the dangers of the internet and the bad things that they can find and everything. But on the other hand, the future lies and the present, very much the present, but also the future lies in internet technologies. And I don't want to hold my kid back and deny the fact that these things exist and that, you know what, chances are a lot of, you know, most of your future, at least in the near term, is going to revolve around this technology. So embrace it versus fear it. It's a very fine line, though. Like, you know, I don't know. That's kind of how I feel about it.
It's true. I mean, my plan is really to have no plan. I'm going to just let her show me what she's interested in. But I realize that if I show her, you know, I showed her one Elmo video on YouTube, you know, a few months ago, and now all she wants is YouTube and playlists on YouTube and more Elmo on YouTube. You know, so anything I kind of, you know, just give her a taste of, she, you know, she wants more because it's compelling and the tablet is just laying around the house. And, you know, as soon as she sees the tablet, also we video chat with family members. So, you know, in my mind, I'm like, I'm going to let her guide me, but I also realize that what I show her, you know, she wants more of. So it's really, I'm just kind of taking it as it comes.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Yeah. And Jeff, what you were talking about at the Business Insiders Ignition Conference, few interesting things just to kind of summarize that just real quick here. A group of New York teens that were kind of interviewed on what we're talking about right now, about productivity, how they work at school, you know, do their work at school and beyond. A couple of interesting things that they pointed out. And of course, this could be regional, kind of like what you were talking about, Gina, different in, you know, different around different areas of the country. But they say collaboration and mobility all revolve around the internet for their work. That makes perfect sense. They say Google Drive dependency is huge. Google Drive is it.
I think this is informative of the story we just discussed.
Yes, exactly.
This is strategic.
Mm-hmm. Google Drive. Yes, exactly. From an early state, they are relying, most of their work is dependent on
Microsoft?
The Google
What's
Drive.
Microsoft?
Exactly. They don't, Microsoft, no Word, no Office.
Sadly, I still have plenty of demands that I've got to install Word because, you know, our school still wants things written in Word, so.
Yeah,
I wouldn't count Microsoft out as
when the school
dead. I wish it would because I don't ever want to have to install software again so they can write a 3-page essay. Oh my God.
But wait, dumb question. Can't they use Google Docs and then export it as a Word doc? Or
No, my daughter screams at me and says the professors, the teachers don't want this and they want Word and this reason and that reason. And yeah, I've tried to convert it over. And
well, it sounds like writing a book. Ugh.
Yeah.
And then finally, because I think this totally relates as well, some new data from IDC are actually pointing to Google's Chromebooks overtaking the presence of Apple iPads in U.S. schools. They noted 715,000 Chromebooks shipped in the third quarter compared to 702,000 iPads shipped to schools in the third quarter. And, you know, citing all the things that I know I've heard about on This Week in Google anyways, and I completely agree. I'm using a Chromebook Pixel right now, and I love it. Lower cost, although the Pixel's not lower cost, but most of the time, they're lower cost. So bad comparison.
Well, there were great Black Friday sales. There was $149, I think it was, I forget which brand, but one of the good ones. And I actually bought the Toshiba. It doesn't have – the only thing that bothers me about it is it doesn't have LTE, but it's HD screen, 9 hours. The reason I bought it was because when I go to Europe and stuff, I can get more airplane time on it without plugging in. So 9 hours batteries, faster processor than the Pixel. I'll see how it works, but it's just amazing. I got that for $267 with HD, and it's amazing, the prices now.
I mean, Chromebooks –
are what
regularly
are you going to do on it, though, for 9 hours without an internet connection?
I write stuff.
Ah, okay.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And there are ways to work offline as well. Let's see here. Better security measures is another one, which I think is a pretty big deal when you're talking about schools. You know, all the different users, which actually this kind of, you know, harkens back to our discussion earlier. You almost need, well, you need a Google account to use a Chromebook, right?
Yeah.
So, but I mean, you can have Google accounts if you're under 13. I'm pretty sure. I can't remember if I faked the numbers or not, but you know, you can have them.
Google Apps for Education has to allow for that. Yeah, there have to be some. Yeah, there has to be some way. I mean, you can browse as guest. You can use a Chromebook
That's
as a guest.
That's true. You can use it as guest.
But you definitely would want a Google account. So
particularly if the drive integration is such a big deal.
Below are the minimum age requirements to own a Google account. U.S. 13, Spain 14, South Korea 14, Netherlands 16. All other countries, I'll put it in the chat.
Netherlands 16? I wouldn't have called that. I would have thought they would be.
I wouldn't have either. I just put it in the doc chat.
Hmm. Interesting.
Chat. Sorry.
Also, another reason, full keyboard. So, you know, once the iPad kind of came along and the tablet era began or re-began, depending on how you look at it, you know, a lot of people were kind of wondering, hey, you know, are keyboards going to be useless in 10 years when our kids who are growing up using devices that have touchscreens and everything learn, you know, on that at first and continue
but
on?
Yeah, you still need a keyboard.
Yeah, it's more and more it's proving to be
the case. Some country, I forget what it was, I saw a story last week, that some country was going to basically stop teaching penmanship and just teach typing.
Mm. Not surprising. Mm.
And then
interesting.
Well, they might as well have not taught me because mine is the worst. Here's my penmanship.
I swear, see, you
can read a word. One of those?
It's funny, like, I actually think cursive is a complete waste of time. I print, but I do it quickly, so it's a little bit scripty. I mean, the lines, you know, the words kind of move together, but I feel like if you can print and it's legible, just skip the cursive and go straight to typing.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I were a British journalist because you're forced to learn shorthand.
Oh, yeah. That's a superpower.
It really is.
I guess you could take a shortcut and get a cursive font that you use.
Or you could just, you know, tap the record button on your phone. That's another idea.
That's true. That's very, very true. Hey, let's take a break and thank our first sponsor of today. And this is actually a sponsor that I only got to play with this morning for the first time. But I think it's awesome and it's brilliant. It's kind of, you know, harkens back to what we're talking about with children. It's called Little Bits. This is the deluxe kit. It's a modular approach to learning how to work with technology, how to design technology. If you haven't heard about them, Little Bits is moving electronics design and creation from the hands of experts to everyone. And they do so with this kit. It lets everyone use electronics and modular building blocks, as you can see here. It's perfect for makers, artists, designers, engineers, students, kids, tinkerers, hobbyists, musicians, programmers. You've got all of these modular pieces that you can construct, essentially, a bunch of different kind of components of different, you know, use cases. This manual right here actually takes you through, you know, walks you through the process here on, you know, some different projects that a tickle machine, a prank handshake, a truck crane. I was building something earlier, and I'm going to test it for the first time on air here. This is supposed to be a noisemaker. So let's see here. So we've got these different modular pieces. So they connect by magnet, right? So I can take this, which is the pulse module, and I can take this, which is the buzzer module, snap it together, and then I can take this, here it is, the power module, snap that on the side, plug it into a battery. Oh no, game over. No, okay, I've recovered. See, that's how easy it is to recover when you totally mess up. And then, hey, what do you know? I just built an alarm out of components, just snapping them together. The way that they snap together basically, you know, prevents you from connecting it wrong because they're magnets, they're polarized magnets. So it doesn't allow you to snap it together incorrectly. And I mean, that's just one of the kits that you find in the manual. It's just filled with tons of these kits. And honestly, this is the perfect time for something like Little Bits. It's obviously the holiday season, perfect holiday gift. You could actually fit this whole box into a large stocking, but it would fit. Little Bits has something for everyone during the holidays, whether you're a musician, programmer, gadget geek, or just, you know, an enthusiast of this kind of thing. They have a holiday gift guide on their site, so you can find a great gift. Now, for the Tinkerer, the deluxe kit includes 18 modules that snap together with billions of circuits. There's no wiring, no soldering required. That would be more advanced stuff. This is like the beginning stages, building you up to that so that you understand signal flow and what these components do. What could take days to make without Little Bits now takes seconds. And it's just a great learning tool for this kind of thing. I remember when I was a kid, you know, they had the sets that you could get at Radio Shack, the big boards, and you could play around with them. This is like, you know, kind of another stage of that, just building components. And it makes it easy because of the magnets on board. And it's just an easy way to build really cool stuff. So new customers get $20 off purchases of $80 or more by going to littlebits.com. And while you're there, enter the promo code TWIG, and you'll get also free shipping in the U.S. Really cool stuff. I had a lot of fun playing around with this. I know you or whoever you happen to get this for will enjoy it as well. Take a minute and go to the site, littlebits.com, and enter the promo code TWIG. Save yourself some money. And it's really cool stuff. This is the kind of thing that I see and I'm like, man, I want to introduce this to my 4-year-old and see what she can create. 4 might be a little young, but with my help, we could create something that beeps and maybe that sparks her interest and gets her interested more in designing stuff like this. So littlebits.com, promo code TWIG. Check it out for yourself. And we thank Little Bits for their support of This Week in Google. All
so
right.
Cool.
Yeah, it really is.
Really, really cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Let's see here. So is there anything that you guys are particularly charged up about talking about, like Google Plus? Do we want to go down the Google Plus rabbit hole right now? What do you think?
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah? Let's do it.
All right. I'm curious to see where this heads. I personally, I love Google Plus. Use it all the
time.
Before
we start, yeah. Is Mike in the studio? Is he listening right now? I need to know before we start.
Well, you are in your underground bunker, so I think you'd be all right.
It's true. All Mike right. can't reach you. Also, it's his birthday today, so he's probably in a particularly good mood, and I don't think he's here anymore. I think he's actually celebrating his birthday,
which is what he should be doing, really. So I can say whatever I want about Mike.
Oh, yeah, he's not here. You can talk about him. It's cool.
Okay, good.
He'll never hear any of this.
No, totally. It's not recorded in any way.
Safe zone.
It's just us girls. Let's do it.
All right.
Mike's off happy having 450,000 people wish him a happy birthday on Google Plus.
That's right.
No big deal.
That's right.
No big deal.
No big deal.
So let's see here. So what are we talking about? Chris Messina, who is the former developer advocate and UX designer for Google Plus, took to Medium and kind of came out swinging against his old project. He wrote about how Google Plus has messed up, I'll say, although he didn't use those words. He used words that I can't say, and dropped the ball. He complains about how David Bespris, who's Google's head of social media, has pretty much said nothing publicly about his vision for Google Plus since he took his role a few months back. Chris also points out that iOS updates to the Google Plus app have literally trickled over the past year, while competing services have iterated quickly and shown that they're much more, in his mind, much more dedicated to the platform. Chris also argues that not one social network like Facebook should have such a demanding lead in the space, and a company like Google is one of the very few that has the resources to successfully take it on, yet that doesn't seem to be happening. So, he's asking why Google Plus exists for Google. The company isn't going to use it as a universal repository for our identities within Google, citing that Google took a conventional approach rather than a forward-looking approach to its challenging in the social network space. So that's kind of where this all starts. Did you guys get a chance to read Chris's post on Medium?
Eager to hear what my colleagues think, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
What do we think starting there?
So I'm always a little... I don't know. I'm always surprised when an engineer or anyone really kind of publicly calls out a former employee or a former team that they used to work with. Like, that always makes me stop and question. I did it once with Lifehacker. I regretted it later because it's one of those things where it's like, you could talk to people internally. But, look, it's funny. Chris wrote this because he had tweeted. He'd kind of snarked about how Google Plus had this bug, which actually didn't turn out that it was not a bug at all. It was a Chrome extension that he had installed that was buggy. Mm-hmm. So I feel like this was him just explaining, why he was kind of a jerk on Twitter about it, even when he, when it wasn't true. I think that it's totally reasonable to question what's going on with Google Plus because Google isn't telling us what's going on with Google Plus. So I think it makes sense to question it. But I found Chris's reasons why he thinks it's not going anywhere kind of vague and not really well backed up. And so I thought Mike Elgin, not to jump to the next thing.
But
Mike responded point by point. We all know that Mike is, has a huge followership on Google Plus, has been a very passionate, ardent user of Google Plus from the very beginning. I actually found Mike's response to be a little more religious than he's just super zealous about it. And I get it. He's had a really good experience with Google Plus. So I'm kind of somewhere in between the two.
Did you read Ian Rosenblatt's, Gina?
Oh, I didn't. Let's see. Because
Chris linked to it. I put it up right before the show. And it's interesting because what it really goes into is the idea that what Google Plus could, perhaps should have been, was not Facebook Lite, but was Google Me, and was the opportunity for a personal data marketplace, a data repository, data storage. I'm not exactly sure what. So it's interesting to think what Google Plus could have been. And then I have to ask. Well, so I think I see two things going on. One is that Chris is seeing Google Plus, no matter what they say, kind of orphaned in terms of what development's happening and what's going on. But on the other hand, it's not too late to make Google Plus into something. And my last point on this one before we move to Danny is that I put up a post last week on the Germans. Don't worry, we won't do Leistungsschutzrecht this week. But the discussion on Google Plus beat the discussion anywhere else. I still find that the case. I still find better discussion there, and I don't want Google Plus to die. which is what I feared that Chris was kind of warning.
Yeah, it just, it seems like everybody wants us to talk about how much Google Plus has failed, but these are all folks who don't use it. And like Google Plus did nail. I mean, there's a couple of really good parts of Google Plus, and if you interact on it, it's a great. I mean, we have a community for All About Android. It's fantastic. We run our polls there now. It's fantastic. I find it really. It feels like everyone's kind of like, oh, gotcha. Google put something out there and it failed. They did it again. They failed with Buzz and they failed with Wave, and now they're failing with Google Plus. And it's a weird thing, especially since if you look at Google Plus holistically, which is as a platform and not a social network news feed, it's wildly successful. And I use it every single day. I use Google Plus Photos. I use Hangouts. I sign into my Google Plus profile. It's comments on YouTube. It's comments in the Play Store. Like, it's a tremendous thing. And I actually think Google Me has gotten built. It wasn't called that, but it's Google now, right? And like, Google continues to. Google accomplished something huge with Google Plus, which is they put all their products under one privacy, one terms of service, and one privacy policy, and gave themselves permission, and it gave you the opportunity to opt out of giving them permission to for all their products to talk to one another and let one another know about what your data is where. And so Google really is a repository of your personal data. And so I feel like all those things kind of came to fruition. But there's this, I don't know, I feel like there's still this like weird raging debate about this social network aspect of Google Plus, which I think
you
is just like a small
to Mike
part of
than
it.
You do to Chris.
Well, you know, I just I don't interact on Google Plus a whole lot just because I don't know why. I don't know. I reach for Twitter more quickly.
Right this moment, there are some city just in this discussion. There are some, the Google City experts put up a picture of them watching Twig live. So let's give them a shout out. But where do they put it?
That's totally
on Twitter.
It's Matteo Doni. He's a repeat guest on All About Android. So there he is. Hey, how's it going, Matteo?
Yeah.
Yeah. The link's in the doc, Brian. It's below.
Yeah, I like Twitter because it's low effort, right? Like I'm just lazy, and it's easier for me to tweet things than to put.
It's high troll.
That is true. It is high troll for sure. Hey, Matteo.
Hey. So I love Google Plus. Use it all the time. I would say more than anything, it gets used for the stuff I do here at Twit. And because, you know, a part of what Chris is saying here is that Google Plus has ended up being less of an identity thing and more of an interest service.
Right.
And he's saying, you know, is that enough? It could have been so much more. And now it's basically, you know, glorified forums of some sort or whatever. But it's true. The conversation you get on Google Plus is unlike conversation that I get anywhere else. Maybe you could liken it to something as active as Reddit, perhaps. You post a Reddit post, you put it up there, and you know, it happens to be in this particular bucket, you know, the Android subreddit or the Apple or whatever it happens to be. So you're surrounded by all these other people that feel just the same way that you do because they're following it. And then they all pile in and you know, create this great conversation around this particular thought. And Google Plus definitely feels like that. And I don't know, but could it have been more? Did they mess up the opportunity? I guess there's still time. There's still hope that Google could do something more with it. But anytime they try and do something more with it, tie your social identity or your online Google identity to Google Plus, people backlash because they say, don't force me to use Google Plus. Don't force me into your social plan because that's not why I use your stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I... that's sort of where to begin on it. You know, I think that Google Plus is a failure in the sense of, from my perspective, is it top of mind for a lot of digital and social marketers? And no, it is not. And it is not after, what are we, 3 years into it? When Dave Bespris had that long interview, I posted it and I said, somewhere like Chris Messina and other people, like, here's a long interview that basically tells us nothing.
Right.
And in fact, not only tells us nothing about what's going on, but doesn't even give us figures on their user growth, which is the first time they've done that for as long as I can imagine, which was not a positive thing. Because, you know, I mean, you can argue about all the user numbers all you want, but when you don't even give them out anymore, that's just not a positive thing. And because, if you post something about Google Plus on Google Plus and it is even remotely negative about Google Plus, everyone comes out of the woodworks and just starts yelling. Interestingly, by the way, and that's part of the difference. You know, one of the things that Google Plus is very successful for, and I think counts as a big win, as I've written before, is it is a great place for the fan people. Okay, and it is a great place for the Android fanatics, and it is anything that has to do with Google, that is a home for those people, you know, that Google's not had before. It is the Apple store of Google, right? So, you know, kudos to them. They've done that. But I quite often can share things across all three major social networks to me, Twitter, Facebook, and Google, and it is only on Google Plus where the Google Plus stuff has to come into this big discussion about, is Google Plus great? No, is Google Plus being attacked? Or is this a, you know, whatever? People on Facebook don't have those kinds of debates because people on Facebook are not trying to figure out whether or not Facebook should exist or not. It does exist. They see the value. They've moved on from that sort of thing. So to come back when I, you know, I did this post after 3 years and I was saying, look, it was fine in year one to say that when I would encounter different social marketers or whatever, that they'd be like, well, I don't know if I should be doing this or whatever. And you'd be like, yeah, you really should be doing it, if only because you had a search optimization benefit that came with it. You get into like year two and they're still not sort of doing it, but they are doing things like Pinterest, right? People won't even question that they should be doing Pinterest, but they can't even take the time still, major brands, to take 5 minutes and make their page, or to simply share the same thing they put on Facebook on Google Plus. It is not that hard to do, and they don't even see the value in doing that. So when you get into year three and Google has taken away some of the value of Google Plus in the form of, say, authorship or whatever, and we're still having this discussion about, well, people don't get it, or these people don't use Google Plus. It's like, you know what? We're at the tipping point. It is not a question of, well, they don't use Google Plus and they don't get it. It is a question of, why after 3 years do so many people clearly not feel compelled that they need to use Google Plus? And so that's where I would say it's been a failure in terms of it being a standalone social network, if the goal was to have it come up and be Google's Facebook, which they never said was their plan, but obviously was their plan and their hope and their dream.
Here's a question for all three of you.
Yeah.
What are the odds? Give me a timetable. Let's say within 2 years, is Google Plus still alive?
Yeah.
Google Plus, the social network.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's still there.
Yeah,
still
I would say so.
Yeah, I actually really, Danny, you made a really good point, was that they made a social network for super users. And maybe it's just that. I mean, you know, and that's
a success. I mean, that's and that's why I mean, it's like you can say it's a failure on one hand, and you can say it's a great thing in other things. There is a photo community that is there. And in fact, there's perhaps an argument that Google Plus has become the new Flickr in some ways for a certain group of people. So they have different audiences, and maybe there are things that they can do with that. And it's been interesting to also watch them do stuff like, you know, Google Photos. What I think, to your question, Jeff, is what happens, Google Plus, the social network, is still there, but parts of it start getting broken out and become more substantial on their own. And Google Photos is a good example of that. Google Photos is an awesome, awesome product.
Yes.
That
it is.
If it were released from people still feeling like it's tied to Google Plus as they're doing, I think even more people would do it. Why you wouldn't be using Google Auto Backup for all your devices, because not everybody has an iPhone, yet you can use it on everything. Well, you can't use it on a Windows phone, but interesting Windows phone backup you can use, or OneDrive you can use on all three of the smartphones. So, but you know, Microsoft still has some challenges there. But the Google Photo option, it's wonderful. And I think they were smart when they brought it out as a photo app. And I think as they get people using that, even if there's not the social aspect necessarily, there's an opportunity for them to maybe do more with Google Photos. Maybe Google Photos can be their kind of an Instagram type of a thing. And there's this whole argument that, are we going into this era of social networks that are no longer the all-in-ones like Facebook? And the real future is, as Facebook seemed to think, we just keep building all these little specialty types of things. So, you know, anyway, I'm sure it'll be there. I think you're not going to see a lot of further development into that particular platform. That if you do see new social efforts, they will probably be more standalone social efforts. They may tie into Google Plus in some ways and other parts of Google, but I don't think you're going to see them as big things within Google Plus itself.
Yeah, I mean, it does feel like all the features in the social app, like, you know, plus ones and comments, and I mean, those are things. And authorship, well, authorship got taken away, but yeah. Those are things that you see elsewhere on the web. You know what I mean? It feels like Google's building these features out, and yes, they're all a part of social network, but it doesn't feel like that's code that's, you know, specific. You know, Chris Messina did say, like, Google only invests in the projects that are doing really well. And hey, they killed Wave because they had less than 1 million users, right? But in so many ways, Wave lived on in Google Docs. Mm-hmm. We see so many of the features, and now Google Plus with polls. So I don't know. I do think it's going to be around in some form, but maybe they'll be broken out into a separate app and maybe not as central. I think that they launched it with the idea that this is going to be the central hub, and it didn't get the reaction and get the users that they thought it would, and so now they're breaking it out.
Yeah, and they certainly had the ambition in the beginning. Whether they say they did or they didn't now, they had the ambition for this to be a big, all-encompassing social network. And now, over the last 3 years, it's kind of settled into the comfortable niche, you know, tailored to niche zone that it is right now.
It's
not a bad thing. It's just different.
No, you're right. You're right. And I think Danny's point is great. But there's another analysis. The other analysis is that Google needed more social signals.
Yeah.
Facebook had the monopoly on the social signals. Google has social, you know, has contextual signals out of Android for a lot of users, but it didn't have social signals and connections and social graph and all that to make for a better Google as a service and a better Google as an advertising company.
Absolutely.
So, Danny, I think you're saying is that if that ambition was there, that's dead, you're saying.
Well, no, and I think that's a real problem that they have too. If you go back before we got Google Plus, they'd rolled out Google Plus One. And they said Google Plus One was going to be really important for them to have new signal to use in search. Then we got Google Plus, you know, that we're putting all this together. But then the Plus Ones were dropped out of search. And Google Plus and your connections on Google Plus still can trump every other factor on search, right? If you are logged into Google and you are connected with a brand or a person and you do a Google search, all that stuff about you got to get links, you got to have H1 tags, you got to have the multiple words, all that gets tossed out the windows. I just did a search for Mike, you know, Elgin, right? I just searched for his name. The second thing that came up after his name on Google Plus was his response to Chris Messina, which is ranking high because I'm connected to him. And so it's figuring out I want to do this. But I do think they have this issue. They wanted those social signals and they couldn't get them from Twitter because their deal was falling through, and they didn't want to get them from Facebook because they just didn't want to agree to Facebook's terms, and that all never, you know, happened. But it may be that, yes, they still have enough of the signals that are coming in to give them some reassurance, but they still may need to do more. But they are kind of stalled because I still tend to feel like they need something other than the link reliance that they still have really depend on.
Yep. Gina, you were going to say something?
But Google has Gmail. I mean, they have our email, which so when you say social signals, I mean, they have your contact list in Gmail, and they have your the messages of the people that you send. I mean, I feel like that's even – those are stronger signals than anything that you post publicly. But, I mean, of course, you don't have things like link shared or, you know, thumbs up or plus ones or comments on links. But I don't know. It seems like – They
can get some of that, and like we can share links of it. But if you think of it in terms of a ranking signal, you know, Google's predominant, you know, their predominant measure is we analyze links across the web and try to figure out those that have the best and most reputable links in context, right? So that's why when you know, Amazon has a lot of links, but when you search for cars, they don't come up because no one links to them with the word cars, right? But people do link to Amazon and say books a lot, and they're reputable sites. And you can do that sort of thing with social, where you can say, well, you know, this brand has a lot of followers on Twitter or a lot of followers on Facebook, a lot of followers on Google. Therefore, we think it is a very good authority. And so you could then apply, and if you can see the linkage between the brand social accounts and their own website, then you could apply some of that authority to the website and give them a boost that way. You can also then do the leveraging of, well, we've seen a lot of shares to this particular article. Wow, everybody's into Kim Kardashian's photo. So, you know, we're gonna give that some extra credit or whatever. And that kind of goes into it as well. It is true that you have an issue that not everything gets liked that we like, but that's even more an issue when it comes to links. Think of all the things that you like in your life. that you know, all the businesses that you are really pleased about, that you have good experiences with or whatever, and how often do you actually go back and then write a blog post about them, make sure to link to them, make sure that the link hadn't have a nofollow that got put onto it or all these other things that go on there. In contrast, I think arguably many more people who like things are actually using social to give those signals. It was like 2 years ago, and I talked about this thing like social as when everybody gets to vote. And what I was saying was when you use links as a method of trying to figure out who should get votes for search rankings, it is like you were saying democracy in the United States when it started was everybody gets to vote as long as they're 35 years old and older, own land, and are white. You know? Most people are kind of disenfranchised if your idea on how you count votes comes down to links. So I think social is really important for them, but you know, it's still kind of early days on how they're figuring all that out. And Google Plus, if that was going to be the solution, has gotten them a bit closer to it, but still has a ways to go.
Yeah, it definitely didn't succeed in that way.
Yeah.
But I see your point that those are the social signals they were looking for.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Google Plus is one more reason for someone to log into their browser the minute they turn on their computer as well. So all that extra information that it gets by just you being logged into your, you know, a Google account on your browser.
Don't get me started on logging in, fella. Don't get me started. This is your 4 minutes of Jarvis rant. I'm still having fits about double accounts. And I got the Nexus 6, it was driving me bananas. Google doesn't have the opportunity to know the full me. Google thinks I'm schizo. There's thinks there's two me's and they're totally separate, and it makes me schizo to try to deal with it. All right, that's it.
That wasn't 4 minutes. Come on, I was expecting something a little bit longer than that, but that's okay.
You're the new kid.
All right, I appreciate that. let's take a break. Let's let Jeff calm down a little bit. Just a little bit, because we got to keep him amped up a little bit for the rest of the show. We're going to take a break, but we want to thank another sponsor of today's episode. That would be SmartThings, creating things for your home, essentially. SmartThings lets you control and monitor your home from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. They have all of these modules, these components to building a smart home. So this is the hub. This is basically what all of these components tie into. There's the Ethernet port down there. And you connect this to your home network. And then, by way of all of these different components, that's the multi-smart sensor that can do things like, you know, make sure, you know, at least alert you if you've left the garage door opened. There's the moisture sensor for, you know, if you want to monitor whether you might have a leakage in a room or something along those lines. All of these different modules talk to this hub to let you know basically whatever you want to know. You can actually get in there and kind of design your smart home from the ground up. And depending on, you know, if you have developer abilities as well, you can really get into the, you know, the nitty gritty and program something very unique. There's a motion sensor right here. Tons of components here with SmartThings that allow you to do just all sorts of cool, crazy things. With the SmartThings app, you can easily see what's happening in every room from your device. All of your connected devices report into this app. It's like having your home in the palm of your hand. The app is free, of course, the SmartThings app, and it's available for iOS, Android, and Windows Phone. And the really great thing about SmartThings is that the possibilities are truly endless. SmartThings family of smart sensors and outlets work with hundreds of popular connected devices, including offerings from Logitech, Dropcam, Nest, Sonos, even Philips Hue. And if you're a developer, like I said, you can create new ways to use SmartThings. And then not only that, so you've created this awesome, cool thing that helps you out, you can publish it for everyone else to use. And SmartThings recently announced that in 2015, you'll also be able to control and automate a variety of Samsung appliances, including refrigerators, washer and dryers, air conditioners, even a robotic vacuum. Super cool stuff that you can do. It's literally one of those things where your imagination can run wild and you can just, you know, what does your dream smart home look like? SmartThings helps you facilitate that and take that into your own hands. To get started creating your smart home, visit smartthings.com/twit. You're going to save 10% off any home security or solution kit by just entering the code TWIT10 at checkout. And for fans of TWIT, solution kits start at just $170 and home security kits start at $350. Each kit includes a SmartThings hub with everything you'll need to turn your home into a smart home in as little as 15 minutes. You also get free shipping within the U.S. So take a minute, go to smartthings.com/twit and check it out for yourself. And remember to enter the code TWIT10 at checkout. And we thank Smart Things for their continued support of This Week in Google and the rest of the TWIT network. Good to have you guys on board. All right. So, Brian, I didn't warn you about this part, but do you know a little something about the Google change log, perhaps?
Perhaps.
Let's do it.
The Google change log.
Gina Trapani with this week's Google change log.
Thank you. Thank you, Jason and Brian. So look, I got to warn you, it's the week after Thanksgiving. There's not a lot here, but we have a couple of things. Just today, Google released a new Android app called Device Assist. It offers live tech support, troubleshooting, tips, and more. The catch is it's only for Nexus, Google Play Edition, and Android One devices. Sorry,
I have it. I have it installed. I can show it while you talk about it.
Oh, that would be that. Yeah, that would be great. That'd be great. So in addition to offering quick access to Google support, the app detects issues with the device's setup, makes suggestions on things like GPS, connectivity, and battery settings to improve overall performance. It gives you kind of, it's like proactive troubleshooting to help you sort of get the most out of your device.
This is like tips.
How's it looking to you? This is kind of, how's it looking to you, Jason? Do you get like a live Googler on the line? Is it like, is it like Amazon?
Well, so looking for help, send device information to Google for improved technical support, see Google's okay, sure.
Okay.
I don't know what I'm about to do here.
Are you about to like launch a help?
Okay,
app
so you can
request a callback.
You can request a callback. Provide
that.
A backup number if you can. Phone issues will be easier to solve if we can call you on a different phone.
Oh, should, hey, wait. Is it illegal to like call them right now and see what they do?
Yeah, of course it is.
So you're telling me to do it then?
Yeah, see if they call you back. See how long it takes.
Oh, that's really? I have to enter information.
Your phone number?
Google, don't you know this about me already?
It's an app on your phone. It didn't ask for access to your number.
Oh. Cover it.
That's really weird.
I feel like we're putting you on the spot here, Jace.
Describe your issue. It's only optional, so I don't have to actually describe my issue, so I won't.
I'm live on a Google-related podcast, and I'd like you to comment on Device Assist. That's my issue.
Right now, someone's calling someone at Google saying, get it ready, here comes Jason.
Yes, exactly. We want to call really, really fast, right? We want everyone to know that this works right away. So I guess I would just wait and see then, and I'm sure at some point I'll get a phone call. And it'll buzz on my wrist, by the way, so I'll really know when it comes through. Detected issues. I don't have any issues on this Nexus 6, so apparently I'm good. But it also has this tips column for, and I think this is actually a really good idea because so many times things inside Android are just kind of buried. You just kind of have to discover them or know that they're there or long press something randomly and, oh, hey, I didn't know it did that. So this is good. This is really good.
It's like having our little Gina Trapani there telling us what
we can. Yeah. It should be called the Trapani tip.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things we do in the academe is we observe our colleagues and write memos about it.
By the way.
Oh really? Go.
This is Jason. Oh, here, hold on. It's
thank you for contacting Google. My name is Tom. Am I speaking with Jason?
Wow, yes you are. How's it going, Tom?
Hey, Jason, I'm doing well, thanks. Looks like you set up a call with our new Device Assist app. That's pretty awesome. What can I help you out with today, Jason?
I have to be completely honest. I called to see how fast you would call because, I'm very curious. I think this is a great, great feature. B, I'm doing a show called This Week in Google where we talk all about Google things, and you're on the air right now, so you're famous.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Jason. I really appreciate that, man.
And we're in the house.
And, that callback only took, 30 seconds, 45 seconds? So I'm super impressed. It's really cool. Great service you guys have. I just wanted to call and see how it goes and appreciate your time. Sorry to bother
you. What are some of the first questions he's getting? Is he got any questions yet?
Hey. So before I let you go, what are some of the kind of first questions you're getting? Are you getting a lot of these kinds of questions, or are you also getting actual service support questions?
Well, my shift just started about 10 minutes ago, so I haven't really gotten many calls yet. You're actually my first call of the day, so, I guess it's yet to be determined what kind of questions we're going to be super for fielding.
So your first call ever doing this is live before thousands of people.
How much training did you have?
How much training did you have?
Oh, this poor guy.
A few weeks.
Excellent.
Okay.
All right.
Are you in a nice warm place or in a cold place?
Are you in a warm place or a cold place? That's Jeff Jarvis, one of the hosts on the show.
I'm in a cold place right now. It's real windy and rainy today.
Well, that's not fair. They should be moving you to California.
My brother.
You are in California, correct?
Yeah, Northern California.
All right. Aww. So then we're experiencing the same weather. We're up in Petaluma, so we have it right out the window as well. Hey, don't want to bother you, but I really appreciate your time. And, check out This Week in Google. You're on it. So.
All right. Well, Jason, I'm real glad I was able to help you out with those questions today. I just want to let you know at the end of the call here, there is going to be a real brief customer support survey asking for any feedback you might have on the support you received. I understand if you've got the time that you need to take for the show. So
right.
I'll go ahead and get you transferred over there. And I want to thank you again for contacting Google and enjoy the rest of your day.
Right on. Thank you so much.
We got to give him good grades now.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
All right. I guess I'll give a good grade while you continue on with the change log.
Sure. Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
I enjoyed that. That was fun.
That was kind of fun. We took up his time, so that it only makes sense that they ask you for feedback.
Yeah.
So Device Assist is available for free in the Play Store right now, and it's only available to users in the U.S. with Nexus Google Play Edition, and Android One devices running Android 5.0 Lollipop. So only for the new stuff. Moving on with the Google changelog, Google Drive apps got a few little useful but little tweaks. Let's see. We've got Gmail on the desktop. Now lets you edit Microsoft Office attachments with a single click. So you open up a Gmail message, you mouse over an attachment, and you click on the edit with Google Docs for Word documents, edit with Google Slides for PowerPoint presentations, or edit with Google Sheets for Excel spreadsheets. And then you can start editing and using them in Google Drive right away. And they now support 15 Office formats, including presentation show files, that's PPS, PPSX, macro-enabled files and template files with better charts and images and table support. So really good Office support there in Gmail and Google Docs and Google Drive. Google Docs got a few other little minor features. You can now merge cells of a table in Google Docs. That's exciting. You can now edit images inside of a Google Doc. So if you got a new Google Doc with an image embedded in there, you can right-click on the image, you choose format, and you can change the color, the transparency, the brightness. This is similar to what was available in Slides. It's now in Docs. And Google Slides on the web got a minor update. You can show slide numbers on throughout your show. So you can go to the insert menu and include slide numbers. And finally, in the changelog, madewithcode.com is a project that Google launched, I think, a few months back. It's there to encourage girls to start learning how to code. They're doing a holiday promotion where starting today on madewithcode.com, girls can use the introductory programming language Blockly to animate the lights of the state and territory trees that will decorate President's Park, one of America's 401 national parks and home to the White House through the holiday season. So this is pretty cool. You go to madewithcode.com, you press the Get Coding button, and there's kind of this web-based WYSIWYG Blockly language that shows you a Christmas tree or a holiday tree and lets you pick out what lights should show, how often they should blink, where they should be, and you can adjust variables and kind of drag and drop these pieces. And then I believe that the park, they're going to choose a few of the programs that were submitted through the site, and they're actually going to program the lights to blink in that way. So really neat little holiday thing. If you got kids in your life, neat way to start programming. Yeah, there you go. Nice, Brian.
I love that. That's awesome.
Good job. Awesome.
Hey, Brian, you did it. You did it, Brian.
You did it. You set a variable.
I'm
now
coding.
Increment it.
I don't know how Brian does it. He codes and he switches the show. It's kind of unbelievable.
The show. It's amazing. It is amazing.
It's the future.
Yeah, he changed the color of the lights. Yeah, it's cute. So, when your kid's really bored, just be like, hey, go to this website and make the lights do pretty things.
Oh, that is awesome.
And take over the world. Become a technologist.
Yeah.
For Christmas.
Step two. That's all I got.
That's
the change log.
All you got for the Google change log. That's how Leo does it, right?
Did either of you guys? Okay. Did any of you guys download Wire?
Wait a minute. What is Wire?
Wire.com. It's a new chat app. It was funded by the founder of Skype, and it doesn't work on the Nexus 6, and I'm pissed, and I want to know.
I saw it earlier, and I meant to install it, but okay, fine. I won't even try.
Nexus 6, can't get it.
Well, that's a bummer. Are you finding a lot of incompatibility with apps on the Nexus 6, or?
No, but you'd think that's the one where they would have got it work. But
anyways, I suppose so.
The website
is worth complaining about.
Yeah,
many beautiful people having exciting conversations on it.
Yes,
you know, another messaging service.
Oh, so this is an iOS app.
Oh no, there is Android.
Oh,
there's Android, iOS.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Talk, message, ping, groups, photos, sound. I guess.
Neat. Again, so there isn't a web app. There isn't a web app. That's why you can't use it on the on the Chromebook.
Mm-hmm. Just mobile. I was just wondering.
Oh, browser coming soon. Womp womp.
Womp womp. So now it's facing the challenge of getting critical mass so that everybody's using it. Man, there's so many of these messaging apps out there.
Back in my day.
There's 10 of them with the Nexus 6. They're losing us.
Yes, exactly. So let's see here. Let's hit on a few of these here real quick. Since I'm realizing we're nearing the end anyways of the show. So how about this? Google is redoing the CAPTCHA. Did you guys see this? They announced a new approach to CAPTCHAs. CAPTCHAs are normally hated by humans, by the way. They call the new system No CAPTCHA. It's built on a new API. Essentially, the system pre-screens users and identifies humans in advance of the CAPTCHA. So ultimately, the user will see a checkbox and nothing more if they're identified as human by the time they get there. A more advanced test can be run if the system can't tell for sure, and that's, you know, something like text recognition, image recognition, that type of stuff. Cool, because I hate CAPTCHAs. I know I'm not alone.
Yeah, you know, re-CAPTCHAs always, CAPTCHAs in general, always felt like this weird old-fashioned thing, you know, like you know, programmers just sort of foisted it upon users, like, hey, this is too hard for us to figure out, so now you have to squint at some blurry image and type this thing in, right? Mm-hmm. I think the thing about no CAPTCHA, I kind of want to know how it works, but it's got that problem, right? The SEO problem, where like if they tell you the algorithm, then the bots will be able to beat it. So now it's just sort of this black box of like, I guess I'm not sure how it works, but I guess you just embed some code and Google calls back to Google and Google figures out based on your IP address and how you behave on the page, whether or not you're a bot.
It's the true Turing test.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you human? Like,
yeah. You're right. I'm not a robot. That's the checkbox. If it can figure out, if it decides that you are not a bot, it'll just show a tech checkbox where that you can check it. If it can't decide though, it will fall back on a CAPTCHA where it'll show you the image and you have to pick the kitten or whatever it is. So I think it's a good thing for users, but it also makes me a little bit worried. Like, what if my IP address gets marked as a bot, you know, and are there going to be forms that I can't submit? You know, I always get a little bit worried about these black box things when I don't know how it works.
And you're stuck in CAPTCHA purgatory because no one wants to be stuck in CAPTCHA purgatory.
Yeah, like,
maybe,
you know.
Maybe some people in the chat room I saw that were proclaiming their love for CAPTCHAs. I don't believe them.
I always love the story, though, about how it was at Louis Von Ahn who did the CAPTCHAs where it was taking text from scanned books that they couldn't quite mm-hmm. recognize. It was a great story. It was like 5 years ago.
Great story.
They would take the text from books that couldn't get recognized, and it turned out the biggest use of CAPTCHA was on porn sites. So he was causing all these people who wanted to get online porn to first help digitize all these classic works of literature by filling out CAPTCHA forms, and then the CAPTCHA form would help them, like, okay, that's what that word is. So it was so clever.
That's pretty great. Yeah.
It was really good.
Might as well put the frustration to use. So how about this? You finally thought the Gangnam Style was a thing of the past. You were wrong. YouTube says that the video has been seen upwards of 2.15 billion times. So many, in fact, that it grew beyond its 32-bit integer of 2,147,048,000 483,647. As a result, it's throwing off the view count. So YouTube took to Google Plus to announce that they are now forced to upgrade the system to account for videos as popular as Gangnam Style, which, how did we get here? How did we let this happen?
It's like the Y2K bug all over again.
Totally, yes, the Gangnam bug.
The Gangnam bug.
It's really unfortunate. Great. It's unfortunate. Yeah, well, there's not a whole lot to say about that, to be honest. What am I missing here? What things? I know, Jeff, I believe it was you, put in this material redesign of the Google search page.
Yeah, I thought of that.
What's it all about?
Material design and redesign Google to it. For those of you listening, it looks very flat and blue.
It looks kind of like what you would expect a Google search page that's been material redesigned.
Take a look. See what you guys think.
Let's see here.
My first reaction was, no, don't change my Google.
So that's old.
I'm not sure.
That's normal.
That's the comforting Google we all know and love, right?
Oh, there, yes. Very familiar, very stark. Okay. A lot of
shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of...
It is.
A lot of spacing.
That's not real, right?
No.
No, yeah, it's just, it was a
let's not
concept, proof of concept.
Danny's thinking he missed a scoop. No, don't worry, Danny.
No. Yeah.
No? Does it hurt your brain a little bit?
Yeah.
A little too much kind of like white spacing between. Don't get nearly.
But here's the question. Is Google due for a redesign?
It's a good question.
It is a good question. That's a good question.
Kind of like,
I mean, it's
Google has had a redesign, a constant redesign.
And I know if you want that, to see what, if
you
want,
I know, but you know what?
Redesign.
If you want to see what Google looks like, you don't look at it on the desktop. You look at it on your iPad.
True.
And in fact, it's on my calendar. I never get to it, but I wanted to spend a week of dealing with Google just on the iPad or just on mobile, because it is a radically different experience, both from the results that you're getting to the presentation. But if you look on your thing, you'll see it's not material design so much as it is almost card-based design. But that all flows in through, and you know, you see it first on mobile, and then you see it come into the desktop. So,
Yeah, it looks like a lot of wasted space. Although I really appreciate and like material design on my device, but I don't know if it necessarily the browser version needs to be updated. It's just kind of a little too pretty for Google on the web, when Google for years and years and years has kind of symbolized simplicity, you know, just kind of getting right to the information that you're there to look for. And that just feels pretty for no real good reason, I guess.
Yeah, it's the Craigslist thing, right?
Yes,
like,
exactly.
Like if Craigslist got redesigned, it would feel inauthentic. I'd be like, oh, Bing, I must have gone to Bing, right? Like, it's a little too good looking. Yep. It doesn't feel like authentic Google. I feel like Google's search results on the desktop just get this weird pass around design. Like, they're just like, we're going to keep doing the blue links because this is what it is. I feel like it's the brand.
And people don't feel necessarily like it has to change because it's worked so well up until now. I guess it would be changed for the sake of changing it.
Right, and there's years and years and years of data collection and A/B testing you know, went into every single pixel of the way it looks. I mean, I guess you could say that across every device, but I don't know. It's interesting. My co-founder uses Gmail for in the iPad view, like everywhere, you know, on his desktop, everywhere. He just likes the way Gmail works in the iPad view. So that's interesting, Danny. I think that would be kind of a fun piece.
It's funny, like Gmail, you know, my morning starts off dealing with my Gmail on the iPad, and it's so much more efficient than dealing with it on desktop when I'm trying to get through all my stuff and it's all my tabs or whatever. And
what about Inbox? Have you used Inbox?
Yeah, no. In fact, I was just thinking today, is Inbox going to turn into being the Google Wave of Gmail? But that could just be me. It was so weird when I went to it first place. And then also because I can't use it on a regular Google. You can't use it on Google Apps accounts.
Yep. Right. Don't get me started,
Google App account out the box.
Don't get me started.
So I've been sending all my mail to a Google account, but then I don't check that often. So it's hard to use on a regular basis. And it was just weird. And I didn't know that weird was better. I actually kind of think the Gmail app is a pretty good app, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know what? The other thing is the offline Gmail app, which I, of course, use on my Chromebook, is really good. And by the way, it very easily and smoothly goes back and forth between the two accounts with no hiccups, no headaches, no problems whatsoever. The only problem is it's missing a little bit of functionality that your regular Gmail app has. But otherwise, I would switch to the offline app. It's pretty darn good and it's prettier.
With the Gmail offline? Well, you know, what I mean, I'm on the Mac and I really loved AirMail because it interacts with Gmail really well. It doesn't have the tabs, which I miss a little bit, and I've gotten used to those tabs. But I wish Google would just make us apps for desktop. But, you know, I found AirMail and that takes care of me for my day-to-day stuff. But I have
to do the priority inbox all right?
What's that?
Does it do the priority inbox all right?
I haven't tried to use it. But on a typical day, my inbox all in the day with only about 10 or 12 items in it. So I'm not.
Oh, I hate you.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I hate
you.
A few months ago, I had this great.
You have a 2-minute commute. I hate
every day,
you. And it's
every
warm
day
out there. I hate you.
And in fact, I was tweeting pictures of if you're at inbox zero in the Gmail app, you get a little sun icon.
Yeah, you get sunshine.
And I was seeing that every day, and it made me feel so good. And I tweeted out, and people were going, "What is that?
I've never seen that.
That's really
screen.
Obnoxious, Danny. That's but really
it's
obnoxious.
It's a I little know. Sunshine. It tells you go out and enjoy the day. Yeah. You're done. It's a great, it's awesome messaging. You're done. Go out and enjoy the day. But and it's yes.
If I were going to do an email app, I would probably have an email app that at the end of every week. Or 2 weeks would literally take whatever's in your inbox and just throw it into an archive folder. And because you're never going to get back to that stuff, but you sit there almost a slave to it. I know I'm going to get to it or whatever. And I would just throw it all away because I did this talk once on my things on the email manager, anything that's really important that you don't get to, it's going to come back to you. So leaving it in your inbox doesn't help you in any way. Yeah, so just you archive all this stuff and all the weight is lifted off your shoulders and you just focus on the other things. And then, I don't know, there's other things like it. But, yeah, sorry. So I don't need Priority Inbox so much.
Man, that sounds like a beautiful place.
Yeah.
It sounds like a beautiful place to have Inbox Zero. As often as I try, I can never get there. And even if I get there, Gina, you're saying just get outside, enjoy your day. That's what the sun signifies. That's only for the next 2 minutes. And then suddenly it starts piling up again.
It comes back
in.
It does.
It's
and then
it's
you
Tetris.
Hate the first person who messes it up.
Yes.
It's kind of never ending.
The emails just keep falling in. It's just Tetris. That's how I think about it.
Yeah.
I think of it as Sisyphus in reverse. The mountain keeps falling on you.
Exactly. I actually like Inbox, but I agree it needs to be on my apps account for me to use it here at work where it's desperately needed. On my personal account, it's neat, and I've removed my when I open my Chrome browser, it automatically opens Inbox instead of Gmail, so that's nice. It forces me to kind of use it in mobile and on my phone and everything, but I'm still not entirely 100% sold.
I never get why we have to be such a second-class citizen when we have apps accounts. I just don't get it.
Yeah.
I want to throttle somebody over Google. And the only reason I have a Google Apps account is because I want my domain name. I want my own email and my own domain name. And back at the day, that was the only way you could do it so that when you would email people, you didn't get back. It used to be that if you sent it out, you could send it out from any email address. But if it wasn't actually through Google Apps, then you get this little warning like this person is pretending to be something or whatever, right? And I think they fixed that. But there's this middle ground, I feel like, where they could take regular Gmail accounts and let you use your own domain name and have a few more advantages where I could have the things I want without having to be this apps administrative person and all these. It just makes you want to cry.
Here's my guess. They've fixed it for 2 years. They're dog-fooding it long since all through Google, and they keep it from us just so they can watch this show and laugh at us every week.
And occasionally tweet pictures of it.
But come on.
In the secret evil building on campus.
Yeah. It's just dedicated to you, Jeff.
The Jarvis Room. Let's give them a break. If you are watching over there at Google, you can go get yourself a drink. But leave the audio up because you're going to want to hear this. We're going to take a break and thank our final sponsor of today's episode. That would be Prosper. And Prosper is just a fantastic service for you if you you know, are trying to borrow money. Essentially, there aren't a whole lot of good ways to borrow money when you need it. Friends, family, credit card companies, traditional bank loans. This is how we've done it normally. Now, with a low fixed rate loan with Prosper.com, there's an even better way to do it. Borrow up to $35,000 in as few as 5 days and use that money for just about anything you desire. You can pay off your high rate credit cards. You can fix up your house for the holidays. You can put it into your business. Prosper's online marketplace connects people who need money with those who want to invest. And you don't rack up more debt on your credit cards this holiday season. When you're using something like Prosper, you can pay them off with Prosper. To check your rate, your low rate instantly without affecting your good credit, all you got to do is go to prosper.com/twit. And you can check it out for yourself. For a limited time, Prosper is offering Twit viewers a $50 Visa prepaid card when you get a loan. So just go to prosper.com/twit. It's a special site just for our viewers. And it's up to $35,000 in just 5 days with a $50 Visa prepaid card. If this sounds good to you, check them out at prosper.com/twit. And we thank Prosper for their continued support of This Week in Google and the Twit Network. All right. I believe this is the time where we dive into tips and stuff.
I have one quick story I wanted to do real quick.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
If you don't mind me interrupting.
Not at all.
Just because we talked about on this on an earlier episode. We've done a couple episodes talking about online harassment, specifically on Twitter. And one of the points that Jeff always made, which I thought was such a good one, was that on Twitter, to report harassment, you could only the person being harassed could make the report, not people who are observing it, which doesn't make any sense because, you know, in the real world, if you're at the playground and you see someone bullying someone else, you can step in and help out. And Twitter made a bunch of changes to their abuse reporting this week, or they announced them, and I believe that they're rolling out now. But one of the changes that they made is that if you observe someone harassing someone else, you can report that tweet as a bystander, as an observer. So I'm feeling slightly optimistic about that. But my conclusion is clearly Twitter is watching This Week in Google. So hi, Twitter. Good job. And keep working on it. That's all I want to say.
You know, I talked to CBC about this today and quoted you often, trying to talk about, you know, the difficulties that they have. But yeah, it's almost as if, I don't want to do a conspiracy theory, Twitter made it incredibly easy to report spam. One click, boom, done. And I do it all the time because it helps me and it helps them, but incredibly difficult to report harassment, imposters, trolls, and other things. You had to go through so much effort, you just didn't bother. It's like they didn't want to know. And then it got to the point, and I think the thing that you've emphasized so much on the show is that you're right. It's also about us all helping each other by being able to report these people and being able to get somewhere with that. And yeah, I hope that they were listening to you, and they should get smarter about this. And I think after the beheading videos and the naked celebrity photos, Twitter is no longer a 100% open network. Now it's got to decide where the line is, but it's got to decide that with our help. And they were not getting our help before. They were not being helpful before. It was far too difficult. There was one horrible – I'm going to get in trouble right now, but there's one horrible twit troll who just keeps on resurfacing. And I try to do all of Twitter the favor of
reporting them.
Oh,
we just lost Jeff.
Oh, no.
That favor, the favor that blanked out the video. What a what unfortunate timing for the video to go away. maybe when we get him back, he can finish that thought. But just to kind of give you a sense of the rest of the stuff that Twitter's doing here, fewer steps to report abuse. So they're kind of making it easier with fewer steps. Like you said, letting bystanders flag posts they see as abuse. A blocked users page and blocking users from viewing a person's profile when they've been blocked by that user. So I say, I don't want that person to look at my profile anymore or my tweets. You can do that. And, you know, it's not just a matter of me not seeing them anymore. They can't see my stuff. So powerful controls.
Better. Yeah. Getting better for sure.
Definitely better. And that's going to be available over the course of the next few weeks. Man, I really want to hear what what Jeff had to say.
Yeah. I think it was the troll who shall not be named. Maybe got him cut off.
I mean, the timing was just impeccable.
That was amazing. I was like, wow, no good deed.
We'll see what happens there. All right. So let's, but thank you for bringing that up, because I did want to definitely mention that, and I skimmed over it. So
yeah,
apologies
thanks for,
on
thanks
that.
For letting me interrupt. Okay.
No problem.
Let's carry on.
Okay. So, Gina, we might as well start off with you. What's your tip?
So tip this week comes from Lifehacker, pretty good site there. So you could search for your email receipts right from Google. This can help you out with expense reports or holiday shopping. You go to the Google search box and you just type in my purchases. You will see receipts in your results from your Gmail. It's pretty good. And you can also you can narrow the results. So if you're like, hey, just show me all my iTunes purchases, do my purchases, iTunes or Amazon, for example, and it'll only show you receipts from that. And now, of course, you can search for receipts inside Gmail as usual, but pretty neat to see. I think it's pretty neat. I don't know. Some people might think this is creepy, but I think we're all sort of getting used to the idea now that Google has our Gmail and it shows us some content from our Gmail in our regular search results. I think this is kind of neat, kind of helpful. So it's my purchases when you're signed into Google, and you'll see your receipts in the search results.
Excellent. And right about this time of year, that's super handy.
Yeah.
I feel like my inbox is overcome by receipts and purchases and everything right now. Another good app along those lines is Slice, actually, which I'm reviewing this week for Android App Arena actually later on today, 4:30 p.m. Pacific. It's really good. Anything that you can do to kind of manage this influx of receipts, particularly this time of year, is super helpful. Danny, I'm trying to remember if I even gave you the heads up on a tip, and if I didn't, I completely apologize. Is there anything you want to kind of talk about, or a tool or tip or anything along those lines?
Sure, I can give some.
Excellent.
It's the I got my little Android snowman here.
Aw, nice.
Aw, isn't he cute? That's not a tip, but that's the introduction, because it is that time of year again. We have the Santa Tracker out from Google that went live 2 days ago, where you can go over and basically just wait until Christmas Eve, and then you'll actually be able to go online and track for Santa using Google's tool. And of course, we have the traditional and the longstanding NORAD Track Santa site that has also gone up, and that went up yesterday in partnership with Microsoft. So, you know, for those of you that are just waiting to count down the days until the jolly old Saint Nick comes, you can check out both of those sites. They both have games that you can play and things you can do with the kids. Apparently, Google's even got a little JavaScript course that kids can play with as well. And that's sort of it for the moment.
Excellent. Yep. Santa Tracker's great. And apparently Santa has his location sharing turned to on, because we can follow his every move. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Good on Santa. Thank you for sharing, Santa. We don't have Jeff yet. We'll see if we can get him back for his number of the week. But I can give you a cool tool. So I don't know if you knew this, but with Lollipop, one of the features that not a lot of people heard about, and maybe it has limited use case, but I think it's pretty neat, is that Lollipop enables you to record your video from your device natively without root. Before Lollipop, you had to do this with root access on your device, and it was kind of a roundabout sort of thing, either that or use terminal and go to A to B and do a command and real geeky stuff. Now it's accessible to anybody. There's an app. There's a number of apps that are doing this. Kosh has his Mirror app that does this. There's also one that I was playing around with earlier called AZ Screen Recorder, no root. And you just install it. It's a free app. It has kind of overlay controls to allow you to record your screen, and it also picks up audio from your onboard microphone. So it's not recording the audio from internally inside your device, because I think maybe that's a way to kind of get around the fact that people could record video and audio from a movie or whatever and rent it and do that. So maybe it's a copyright protection in that regard. But it does record audio from your mic, which could be actually pretty handy if you're doing some sort of demo or whatever, a walkthrough on an app that you've created. If you're a developer of an app and you want to do a walkthrough and go step by step through your app, this is one easy way to do it. It was super, super easy. There's actually a video link, and Brian, I know you're hard at work, but below this link in the doc, there's a link to a video that I recorded of me playing of the new, what is it? It's Run Run, Sackboy, Run, for the PlayStation character. And I recorded this just in the device for about a minute. You can activate it to show the touch controls so that it overlays on the top. And, yeah, just a neat feature that you didn't have access to before Lollipop. So, at least not without Root.
That's so, very cool.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. This app that recorded this is called AZ Screen Recorder, though there are a ton of apps that do this sort of thing.
Is mobile Twitch coming?
There we go. What's that? Mobile Twitch? I suppose so, although this is less live streaming and more recording and then posting later. Who knows? Maybe that'll happen eventually.
I just made somebody a fortune. It's a big business.
Yes, exactly.
I'll never understand it, but it's a big business.
Yeah, no, believe me, I hear you. It's good to have you back, sir. Sorry, that the video dropped at exactly the wrong time.
That's okay. No, the video was smart. It shut me up, which is a good thing. It's going on too long. Google algorithm said, shut up, Jarvis. You just abused us about these accounts, and we've had it. You've gone over your limit of convention.
Oh, the timing, though, man. Okay, well, you are welcome to finish the story, or you can do your number. It's up to you, Jeff.
I'll do the number. Okay. I'll do the number. One of the big things in the advertising world right now is what's called viewability. That is to say, was your ad actually seen, the thing you paid for? And Google put out a spreadsheet that's on the rundown. But the shocking stat in it, which is, you know, full disclosure, is that 56% of ads served by Google by DoubleClick are not seen.
Hmm.
And so that's a huge issue in the media world now, because it's an instant deflator to all the money they used to make. And the truth is, the advertisers before kind of discounted on that basis, same way they did with print, where not everybody sees every ad. Yeah, we know. You tell us they do, they don't. But now, of course, you can count. And you can, you know, places like Chartbeat can tell you what's seen, and analytics can tell you what's seen. And 56.
Oh.
It's Google shutting him down again.
This just never happens with Jeff's video. Of course. Well, 56 something smart, I'm assuming, is what he was going to continue with, because Jeff is a smart guy. Okay. And Brian's working overtime right now, scrambling to get reconnected.
We're really putting Jason and Brian to work here today. Wow. We are really. Yeah, look, Brian's flailing. Oh,
yeah,
man.
It happens, man. Believe me, Brian, I've been there. I know. I've been there. All right. Well, let's I suppose we have to kind of wrap things up, because we have hit the end of the show. Hopefully Jeff gets on before we say goodbye. So we'll drag it out here a little bit. But Danny Sullivan, Search Engine Land, all around awesome guy. Just great having you on today. Really appreciate you joining us. And yeah, just being a part of Twig today. Really had a lot of fun.
Thanks. And you did a great job as a host.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. So tell people where they can follow your work, what you got working on, anything you'd like people to know.
Well, you can follow the work that we do at Search Engine Land, where we cover everything about search engines and search marketing, and Marketing Land, where we cover digital marketing in general. And, you know, if you want to follow me, I'm Danny Sullivan on Twitter. That's usually where I'm most socially active. So that's about
excellent.
It.
Right on. Thanks once again, Danny. Always a pleasure, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
And Gina, I know what you've been up to. A little bit of a think-up thing, right?
Yeah, we're working on our – it's December, so we get to do our best of 2014 insights and think-up, which is a social media
great insights.
Insights,
Gina.
Yeah.
They've been great year-round insights. I've loved them.
Me too.
I'm so glad to hear that. I'm so, well, so glad to hear that. On. Yeah, you can see – we did one on Thanksgiving too. You can see Jeff's ThinkUp, jeffjarvis.thinkup.com, and Danny's at dannysullivan.thinkup.com, and Jason is raygun01.thinkup.com. Yeah, and we're doing kind of like an advent calendar of year-end insight. So there's going to be one new year-end best of 2014 insight for every day in December. And if you sign up, even right now, it'll backfill the ones that you didn't get the last few days. So I think we're only like three in at this point. So Jeff tweeted 175 times on August 15th, you guys, that he's, I love it. He's professorial even on Twitter, which I love.
Oh my God, I must have been on some tear I don't want to remember.
You must have been
on a tear.
I think
you might have been. Reading that tweet, I think you might have been on a tear of some sort. We'll go ahead. We'll blur that out.
Yeah. Whoops, sorry about that. that's at thinkup.com. But when I'm not doing Twig and not working on ThinkUp, I co-host All About Android with Jason Howell and Brian on Tuesday nights.
We have fun.
We have a lot of fun. 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. So if you like the show, you'll like that one. So you should come on by and watch that one, too.
Agreed. Gina, such a pleasure doing Twig with you, finally. It was a lot
of fun. This was totally fun. You rocked it.
You did a great job, Jason. You did a great job.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Jeff, it's been my pleasure to do a show with you as well, even though it dropped a couple of times.
Wonderful.
That's okay. So Geeks Bearing Gifts. Tell us about it.
I want to plug. It's my my kind of non-book book, and I just want to mention that as of today, I'm putting it up chapter by chapter on Medium for free. So the introduction is up on Medium today. You can get it from my blog, Buzz Machine, a link to there. You can still buy it and make my bosses happy, but I wanted it to spread and brainwash the world so the whole thing will end up on Medium for free.
Oh, that's awesome.
And Medium did a great job. They have a creative services department there. I had no idea. And so they formatted everything. They designed the structure. They're wonderful.
Medium's pretty darn cool, I gotta say. It's
great.
A great place for that kind of stuff too. So cool. So check it out. And of course Jeff is on Twitter at Jeff Jarvis, on Google Plus, all over the map. So thank you, sir.
And occasionally on Twig when things don't go wrong with Chromebooks. But
that's okay. It rarely happens.
Good thing Leo wasn't here for that. Leo, I hope you get better. I hope you're happy. Everything works out, but I'm glad you weren't here for that.
Fair enough. And he'll never see it because the show isn't recorded or anything. And you can...
Safe zone.
Yes, right, exactly. You can find me at about.me/Jason Howell if you want to find... my social doings, and of course, All About Android. Do that with Gina Trapani and Ron Richards on Tuesdays. Also do a show that's all about Android apps called Android App Arena. Apparently, I really like the letter A, so all my shows just start with A. So that's just how it goes. And that is on Wednesday nights. I review 4 Android apps each week, and it's a lot of work, but a lot of fun, and I hope that you enjoy it. That's twit.tv/arena. But that is it for this week. Man, what a fun show. Had a great time being host of This Week in Google. I really hope that Leo continues to get better. He's not feeling so hot right now, but we hope we'll see him later in the week, and I'm sure that we will. So get better and enjoy your binge watching of Netflix. And if you want to find everything about This Week in Google, all you got to do is go to our show page. We publish everything up there, our feeds for the podcast. We have our show notes, links, and of course, all of our past episodes can be found at twit.tv/twig, T-W-I-G, and that'll take you right there, and you can find all the notes there. And of course, we record This Week in Google live every Wednesday from 1 to 3 p.m. Pacific. All you got to do is head over to live.twit.tv to watch the madness and be a part of the chat room and get in on the show. But I think that's about it, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us for this week's This Week in Google. And we'll see you next week with Leo sitting in the chair again. Take care, you guys.